Hello and welcome to a divisional round edition of Establish the Bets. My name is Adam Levitan, as always joined by the king himself, Matthew Davidow, to talk through all things betting angles for this weekend's four game slate. Matthew, how's it going?
Good. Good to see you, Adam.
Good. For you guys who don't know, Matthew is, of course, one of the co-founders of Deck Prism, recently merged with Huddle, taking on all comers, bets, big bets, live bets. On the other side of the counter, we attack. We hope to poke holes in Matt on the other side of the counter. Anyways, let's get into the game here. I actually, before we get into this weekend's games, I wanted to get your take on what happened last week with the Chargers Jaguars. And from the perspective of, if you guys are watching the game, if you're on Twitter at all, this story just went viral. This story was a DraftKings bettor risked $1.4 million to win $10,000 on the Chargers minus 125,000 when the score was 27-0. Now, we see bets like this all the time, people risking a lot to win very little. We typically don't see it at the $1.4 million range. I don't know if you saw this. What is your reaction to this? And I assume people shouldn't be doing, even if the bet is plus EV, that doesn't mean you should be doing it, right? I mean, that was kind of my take.
I mean, from a forget that story perspective, and just from a perspective of you know, from my, you know, historical, you know, betting career, etc., I tend to avoid that type of stuff for life EV reasons. Like, even if the bet has edge, you lose the bet, and it's just, I mean, that's a, you know, one of my staples with any gambling, and this is something that I think everybody could kind of learned advice from, is it's got to be fun. You got to make it fun. You can't let it affect your life. Once your work affects your life, well, you've just failed in my opinion. You're not going to be happy, and you make it, if you're not going to mind losing the bet, by all means, make the bet. And another thing you can do in that spot is make the bet a bunch smaller than like Kelly or whatever your bankroll management system would tell you to do. Therefore, you're still making your bet that you know is, you know, profitable. And when it loses, you're just, you know, losing another bet. One of my, like, the American style limit system, but basically the limit is, or, you know, what you're supposed to bet being like the lower of the risk or win, really leaves this kind of thing open. If you change that and you just look at it from a risk perspective, that'll fix all the emotional issues. So definitely myself, I don't like to do that. I'm pretty gambly at times. And I mean, I don't want to lose a big amount for a small amount. I don't think anybody does. And it's also one reason why a lot of times you find edge on that side of the bet too. So it's a kind of a catch-22. Other thing I'll say, as far as like this exact story, and I don't know who leaked this, but I definitely am very, you know, very against the operators or anybody working for the operators, et cetera, leaking this information to the press in any way. If my message to the regulators would be, this is not, I'm not saying this would happen here, by the way. I don't know. Maybe the better leaked it, which is obviously perfectly fine. It's his bet. He can do what he wishes. But I know in the past, you've got times where the sports book, I mean, you got reporters calling sports books to asking where the action is. And I think it's like incredibly wrong for the operators. Yeah. There's people even on Twitter, some operators on Twitter posting tickets. I think that's so wrong. I think that has to be protected information for so many reasons. And as the regulators need to take a long, hard look at this, and, you know, it's a problem in our industry.
I thought that they had to get people's permission to share the slip. I had no idea that they were doing it without the permission of the bettors, you know, sharing the slip. And maybe they are, maybe they aren't. I don't know. Either way, this case, though, my God. So hopefully you guys, if you're listening to this, you've heard of Kelly Criterion. It's just like a system. There's a calculator out there on the internet you can find. It basically explains like what to bet so you don't have risk of ruin. However, it's very, very, very conservative. Like if someone was using Kelly for this bet, they would need to be like Elon Musk or like Warren Buffett or something to like make this bet on minus 125,000, 1.4 million to win 10K. And so, yeah, I was going to say the same thing that Matt said about these bets. Like, yeah, maybe this guy's a really good bettor and maybe he showed EV. I doubt that's the case, but maybe he did. Still, the life EV, like Davidow said, I mean, the risk of ruin, the emotional despair that would haunt me for days or months or weeks after losing 1.4 million to win 10K would be just be, I wouldn't be able to like go on rationally. So there's a lot of spots like that. I mean, I even in poker, like sometimes there's spots where like, yeah, it's close, man. I think this might be 50-50 if I should call or fold, but God, if I call and lose, I'm going to be like on tilt for the next 3 days while I'm playing, then it's not worth it. You know, it's not worth it. So I think there's people mentally stronger than me, but yeah, if you're not mentally strong, I definitely think it's worth considering.
We're also all different as, you know, as people and bettors. And I don't, maybe this person, whoever he was or whoever's money was lost here in this spot, maybe they had very good reasons for making the bet. Maybe this was a good decision for them. And I usually just kind of assume that and, you know, move, you know,
yeah,
in that regard. And the, I mean, another thing I can't stand from a reading, like, another part that I don't like about the reporting currently on the industry is anytime a big loss is like celebrated in any way, that's bad energy. And I would rather not cross my path.
Yeah. And the biggest, the most popular story right now in the industry is the Mattress Mack stuff, who, by the way, bet $2 million on Cowboys money line this week at Caesars. But anyways, the Mattress Mack stuff is just interesting because he's like obviously a promoter. He's hedging his promotions at his furniture store. You know, he's an old guy with a lot of money. I like Mattress Mack. I like the whole thing of it, the whole story around it. So yeah,
he seems to be having fun with
exactly.
it.
I mean,
isn't that what this kind of, I mean, the industry should be about fun. The fact that his fun includes, you know, suitcases full of $100 bills and photo opportunities and flying around the country. Well, yeah. Good for him. And if people want to, I know, you know, he's obviously promoting. So everything I'm talking about as far as like, you know, the reporting, no issue with that reporting. I'm always interested in what Master Fact has myself.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Anyways, on to the games this weekend. So the Chiefs are out to 8.5 or so. Looks like there's some nines out there as well on the Chiefs. Yeah. There's a 10 with juice at Pinnacle, but yeah, mostly nines, 9.5. Now, I think from what I understand, there was sharp money on the Chiefs. You can confirm that if you want to. Yeah, I do think that the interesting thing is with these teasers, everybody, every square and maybe every sharp too, I don't know, feels to me like they're on Chiefs teaser, Eagles teaser, move across the three if you get the 8.5, and move across the three also on the 7.5 on the Eagles. Anyways, what are you seeing in terms of action on Chiefs Jaguars? And what do you think about this teaser that everybody's talking about, Chiefs and Eagles teaser?
I'm not generally a teaser fan for multiple in-depth reasons that we could do a whole podcast on.
Yeah.
That being said, I think it's a great recreational bet to look. So you can bet the Chiefs at any basically price you want to bet them these days, right? You can go on multiple operators and get a two-way price on almost any line. Mm-hmm. Now, can you find books, you know, say using the unabated, you know, teaser tool that will allow you to get, you know, an edge based on the way they calculate? Yeah, by all means do that. This, you know, same time, like what the Deck Prism software does automatically is come with the right price on every, you know, the best possible price, right? It's dumb. The best possible price we can come with on every, because everything's simulation based on every single line. Mm-hmm. So to me, there's like no real difference if you're making teasers are about line shopping, is my point. Teaser, yep. Betting teasers is a way to line shop. So I don't really have a handicapping perspective on it. I think that the line could go up more. I definitely, the Chiefs money was sharp. There's multiple reasons to think this line should be even higher than this 9.5, 10, probably not much, but there's definitely a lot aimed at that point. You know, from historical issues, I just read something about Trevor Lawrence may have never played in the snow. Not that I think it's going to snow, but all of this stuff adds up. And this is a lot of times an interesting point of this game in particular that we've talked in the past couple of weeks about home field advantage, regular season, home field advantage, playoffs. Everyone's obsessed with home field advantage because I always get a, like, I'm like one of the few people that isn't. Mm-hmm. And this game to me is one of the like games that ends up in people's like either minds or databases where they're taking a whole bunch of other things that are going on here and chalking it up to like a home field advantage. You got to not only the rest perspective, this is a deep rest perspective, right? Jacksonville has been balls to the ball wall week after week after week. Where Kansas City, I mean, especially after the Hamler cancellation has been, I mean, I don't want to say toasting, but I don't think they had a tough preparation for their final game. Their final game was the day early, the final game they actually had to play was the day earlier. Yeah. They've had a pretty easy run the last few weeks. On top of that, you've got a team with no playoff experience. And here's where I'm talking about, like, it's the fact that the team with no playoff experience is on the road is very correlated, right? The home team has the better record. The home team likely has players that likely was better last year. You know, so you all these like biases kind of adding up. Whereas the climate, we talk about climate with home field advantage, right?
Yeah.
Here's a big climate, a big climate spot. Maybe you do get more of those in the playoffs because it's cold, but it's not a playoff thing. It's a climate thing, right? Yeah. So the issue here is that the Jacksonville players do not have experience playing in the physical conditions in Kansas City. Whereas on the flip side of that, the Giants are in a similar spot against the Eagles. There's no climate issue there. They've already played in Philadelphia this year. All these places are similar. There's a lot less home field advantage in the Philadelphia Giant game than there is in the Kansas City Jacksonville game. But it's not because of the playoffs. It's just because of the specific teams that are in these spots. And so often you get, we've seen these teams, younger teams, and they're in Jacksonville's spot and they vastly underperform. And it's not a playoff home field advantage, but just all those other things that combine into the spot.
Yeah. I mean, Jacksonville is... Man, they had that brutal game that they had to win against the Titans, and they come back last week from 27-0 down. You have the Andy Reid off the bye data, which I think has proven to be, I think, somewhat real. I am not, and then you have all the atmosphere stuff and travel stuff. I'm not surprised that there was sharp money. I guess it came in around 8, 8.5. I don't know if we're going to see more sharp money at 9, 9.5. Maybe it gets out to 10 by kickoff. But yeah, on the other side. Later in that game, feels like the sharp money is actually not coming in on the favorite. Everybody I've talked to seems to like the Giants. Everybody thinks the Giants are going to cover. Now, these two teams played in week 14, and the line was Eagles -7 on the road. Now, the Eagles are home, and it's 7.5 or so. In other words, power ratings between the Eagles and Giants have gotten closer together, I think. And part of that, at least, is due to the way Jalen Hurts played in that week 18 game and how well Daniel Jones has played lately. So what do you think about this Eagles Giants game and where the money's at?
Well, so far the sharp money's on the Eagles. Like, okay. I don't mind that. Like, I have this line touch lower. I'm sure there's also smart people in the Giants. I think this is definitely going to be a two-way game, but the move in this game was definitely sharp from wherever it was early in the week, like more like 7-ish to like now. I see seven, more or less a painted 7.5, a couple percent move there, and that was a sharp move. And and I think that kind of goes back to what you said. It's been a large adjustment. Not only are they home, but they have the rest advantage. Mm-hmm. Now, Sweat's out for Philadelphia.
But they're getting Avante Maddox now, but they're getting Lane Johnson back. And
he'll be back. He won't be 100%.
Yeah.
Hurts looked really bad in his game back. There's a lot of question marks to this game. The Giants are playing tremendously. I mean, Daniel Jones has played unbelievably good the last, 4 or 5 weeks. Also, I know the Giants played the backups, but you don't get to play all your backups. If you only have so many players, the one thing, Staley wasn't right, but he wasn't completely wrong either. And the Giants played a darn good physical football game week 18 versus the Eagles. A darn good physical football game. And in my book, that matters. In other books, maybe not. Like in other people's, models, it very complicated game. And you can make a really good like data structured and subjective argument, I think, to either side here.
Yeah, I mean, God, the talent gap between the two teams though is quite wide, in my opinion. I think wider than 7, 7.5. It's just the Giants are so well coached and they've been playing so well and so hard. And obviously, Daniel Jones gives you something that I think maybe
you could argue that the Giants currently have a reasonable quarterback advantage, which...
Oh, God. Don't start.
in a lot of ways, negates a lot of the other talent advantages. And if that's true, you have 7, 7.5, the best quarterback, the better quarterback in the playoffs is a,
Oh, God. Don't start. We'll get to the quarterback take in a second here. I want to get to these first Sunday game, which is Bills, Bengals. Sometimes the offensive line stuff flies under the radar. People are on it. I feel like everybody's on it. Maybe it's the bubble, but I don't know. Everybody's on it because now Jonah Williams was just ruled out, along with Alex Kappa. And of course, Lyle Collins has been out as well. They're down three offensive line starters against a pretty talented front seven for the Bills here. Joe Burrow, very well known for hanging on the ball too long, taking a ton of sacks here. The narrative, which I actually think has hit mainstream, is that Joe Burrow is going to have like no time. How can the Bengals possibly compete? He's going to be under pressure the entire game, which maybe is true, but I feel like maybe there's some overreaction here. What do you think about the offensive line stuff and anything on Bills Bengals?
Well, if anybody wants to see how Joe Burrow performs with the offensive line that doesn't block, just go watch the four playoff games from last year. They almost won all four of them.
Exactly.
That offensive line was worse than the one that's going to be on the field on Sunday.
Yeah.
The one they had like talent from a talent perspective. So yeah, the guys are out. It's being accounted for. The Bengals have a very good football team left and right. They have receivers. They have running backs. They have good defensive players. They've got great defensive coaching, as we talked about in the show. They got reasonable offensive coaching. If you said, hey, Matt, I think Joe Burrow is right now a better quarterback than Josh Allen, I'd say, okay.
Yeah.
Like, I think they're close enough. I mean, it's a subjective opinion. They're both such completely different players. So there's a lot of – then the Bengals are catching 5.5 here. So that being said, I think the line is correct at 5.5. I think the Bengals offensive line issues are real. I think Buffalo also has, you know, great players and great defensive coaching. I've heard comments that Allen played a bad game last week. I didn't think that. I thought that Allen got unlucky for the most part, and that there's some of the reason this line is lower was because of the Bills' bad luck in a handful of games here down the stretch. We've talked about the Bills' new running game and my take of it being a successful thing in making their offense better than it was before they did it. And other people saying, oh, well, now they've seen pointing the data saying the opposite. I think the Bills are set up very well to be in their absolute best offensive state in this game on Sunday.
Yeah, really good game. I think the line is right, too. I don't really have a take. But, yeah, I think the offensive line stuff, once it hits the mainstream, it's like people are double counting, you know, and I think that's something to think about for sure. 49ers, Cowboys will be the last game of the weekend. This line, I saw some fours, 4.5s. Now I'm seeing a bunch of 3.5s. I think people are like, oh, wow, Dallas' defense was so dominant. Now, they were playing against Tom Brady and this mess of an offensive line and this broken offense that the Bucs had. I'm not surprised Dallas' defense looked like they were the number one elite unit that we know they can be against Kyle Shanahan and arguably the best weapons in the entire NFL. I think it'll be different, but market comes in here. It feels like they're on Dallas at least, and maybe that's just a shot on Brock Purdy, who to me should be moving up in power rankings among quarterbacks. But anyways, any thoughts on the line move in this game? And God, I'm even afraid to ask David out, but I'll ask for your Brock Purdy ranking among all NFL quarterbacks.
But to chop that one off first, I've never been less confident in a quarterback opinion than I am currently about Brock Purdy. In this 7 or 8 starts that he's had, I have gone from thinking that, oh my God, I've gone from downgrading them huge to not downgrading them at all. Back and forth, and I see him make a good play. I see him make a bad play. I see a third down play that should be made that he doesn't make. And then I see him So he's now built up, in my mind, a reasonable enough sample. And the lack of quarterback turnovers that it's starting to become, in my mind, relevant. At first, I just chalked it up to, short sample. It takes a long time to figure out a quarterback's turnover, the true turnover rate. But it's starting to get close to where those, it's the difference between putting that like go route down the sideline when the safety might get there or not, just to the outside of the guy versus just to the inside. It's throwing the slant low versus throwing the slant high. Like Dak Prescott, some of these unlucky interceptions that Dak Prescott has, by now, one of my favorites, they're not unlucky because there are spots where Brady throws the ball, the knees on that slant, and Prescott puts it on the helmet. Well, if you put a ball hard to the helmet of a guy in the middle of the field who's covered, well, you're going to get some tipped interceptions. You're not going to get that thrown to the knees. And there's pluses and minuses to both of them. But I'm starting to think that maybe Purdy has some of this stuff figured out. As far as Dallas goes, I mean, Dallas' defense versus Tampa offense last week, I think, was a nothing event. We know Dallas' defense is good. We know Tampa's offense is mediocre. They didn't run that many plays. There were a lot of like close plays that like Tampa almost made in the first half. I mean, the team had like three drives in the first half. And then the second half, Dallas did play a very soft coverage for a while, and Tampa did just fine versus it. It wasn't like the Dallas, when Dallas went to that, it wasn't like their front four was just completely dominating Tampa's offensive line. It was, I think, very much expected. Dan Orlovsky, who I generally like his takes on, he tweeted during that game that he thought that the Dallas offensive coaching, Kellen Moore, et cetera, knew Tampa hand signals or had figured out something. And that made a lot of sense to me because Dallas was in the right play every single – they were in the right play. And they ran good on a couple of third downs. It's so funny because we needed Dallas to do a little bit better versus Washington the week before. And there were so many of these like third down plays where Dak didn't quite throw to the right space, the right spot, but it was catchable by a good receiver. And none of them got caught. And this week they had like three or four big third downs that the receivers come. Those make the difference. I mean, this is why a team can win by 31 week, lose the next week, and the line is the same the third week because there's a ton of variance in the oblong ball, you know, bouncing around. I can't wait to watch this game. I don't know what side we'll need or anything, but I'm excited to watch Purdy. I'm, you know, always excited to watch Dak. It was the perfect game to end the week with.
Yeah. Do you think this line will move? I mean, there's 3.5s on. I see a 3.5 on FanDuel right now, but it's mostly 4s out there. Any idea if you think it'll move?
Down the head, it'll go down with. Our models made the game basically dead on.
Right.
I've seen some sharp money on both sides thus far. I think you can, again, another one, you can make a reasonable argument for both. You can be the last thing I'll say, especially if, you know, like we're running down the time of the season, but a lot of times I'll say we make the line right on or we make the line right on. I would never take that to mean that there can't be a good side bet on the game. And so, for instance, some models, some groups, some people, some handicappers might be good at one sort of thing, good at one type of thing, might be good at another type of thing. And a lot of times, like all we can do, all I can do as a handicapper, you know, modeler, is come up with the best line I can make with my abilities. And it's very possible that someone or a group could really know better as far as like Purdy, for instance, you know, we just talked about her, be able to, you know, some of the recent, you know, sampling. And really come up with what is a good bet versus them. So if you're listening out there and you make the line 6, you're like, well, shit, do I still want to do this? David Al says the line's right on. I mean, bet your games, track your bets, have fun with it, improve. You can certainly, you know, make a good bet against the game, even if I think there's no good bet there.
Yep, no doubt. Okay, we've gone long enough here on a 4-game slate. Appreciate David Al's time. As always here, really, really good slate, I think. I mean, God, I am so excited for this weekend. My wife is actually out of town, and so it's just me and my 7-year-old and my 4-year-old. I've already informed them that they will be watching 4 NFL football games this weekend. They're going to be absolutely thrilled.
Good luck with that, Adam.
For David Au, for producer Adam, I am Adam. Good luck, everybody.